it's Margaret Robinson here with the Two-Spirited Roundtable Project, and today I'm going to be talking with Alec Butler. Thanks for joining me, Alec.
Nice to be here.
Tell me about yourself and your identity and the kind of work that you do.
I'm an artist, I guess, first and foremost. Queer artist, identify as two-spirit and intersex, and trans. I've written plays, poetry, made films, just finishing a novella about growing up trans, two-spirit, intersex, and the trouble that can come from being that identity in the 70s. It was more unknown, new, I guess, new for me too, as I didn't really discover my own identity till really when I was 30, in my mid-30s, when my mother was dying, and it came out that we had a Mi'kmaq background through my grandfather and my grandmother. Both of them were part Mi'kmaq, but we didn't really talk about that growing up in the 60s, 70s. It was something to be ashamed of and hide and not really talk about.
Yeah, that's my generation too.
Yeah. So I guess the two-spirit thing came about early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. I knew quite a few two-spirit activists in the community who started the Two-Spirit People of the First Nations. I remember that starting and being part of that a bit at the beginning, but I didn't really know about my Mi'kmaq background at that point. So I guess I was just an ally, more so, of that community. And then I start working on this play called Medusa Rising, which had seven characters in it, and two of the characters were two-spirit. And they were played by two amazing actors. Billy Morasty, he played Delina, who was like my first trans woman character that I've ever written. And the other was Gloria Mae Eshkabok. She played Sandy, a two-spirit woman. So I was working on this play with them and also with an amazing black African-Canadian actress named Dawn Roach, who's from the famous Roach family. And so I start working on this play about activists coming together to talk about their losses to AIDS in their community and talk about activism and have this ritual on Halloween to honor their friends who had passed. So I start working with Billy and Gloria, and the first rehearsal we had, I took out a talking stone and started passing it around, and they were like, "How did you know about this?" I'm like, "I didn't really know about it. It's kind of intuitive to have this." And I found this stone in Vancouver when I was there, and I was looking down at the water at English Bay, and I see this really beautiful black stone kind of looking up at me saying, "Take me, take me, take me." And as I bent down to take it, these three geese flew right in front of me, like 2 feet from my face. I'm like, "Thank you." So I've been using this beautiful stone as a talking stone, not even realizing. But I've always been attracted to the spiritual life. I because I've been attracted to the goddesses and the gods. You know, Medusa. She was one of my favorite characters from mythology. And people are like, "What are you writing a play about Medusa?" I'm like, "Because I'm trying to reclaim her and reclaim the anger and direct it at encouraging people to direct their anger at more appropriate targets, I guess, than each other, themselves, you know, being oppressed, part of an oppressed group, queer, people of color." So they were like, "Are you sure you're not one of us?" Billy and Gloria, "They're sure you're not one of us." And Gloria's like, "I think you're the great white hope from the north." I'm like, "Oh my."
So how did you actually come to start identifying as two-spirited yourself?
I guess through them. And it was new for them too. I mean, the whole thing was two-spirit just came about in the late 80s. I also was born with an intersex condition, which makes me both genders. So I was really, I guess I was searching for who I was. I didn't really feel like I was a lesbian. I wasn't quite sure if I was even trans, because I'm not really going towards a gender. Mm-hmm. I like the genders I am. So they kind of both came together at the same time. The intersex, the two-spirit, kind of just made sense to me. And to people I was close to, kind of made sense to them too, knowing me, knowing what I was like. Being a nurturer type and taking care of people all the time. And also being very independent and kind of a rebel, wanting to go my own way all the time. So,
both of which are typical of two-spirited people's roles in community, right?
Yeah. So, and I also had experiences with helping people in their last stages of life. A few of those. Some friends who died of AIDS, I was there with them when they died. I've been also at a birth, one birth so far. And that's another role that two-spirit people play in their communities, being at the gateways of life, death and birth. And so I had experience doing that. And I guess that kind of all came together at once, I guess in the mid-90s. It all kind of coalesced for me. And then I realized I had to change my name. Alec isn't my birth name. And just to honor the male part of me, and part of being part of a lesbian community, which I was for many years, is kind of denying that part or being ashamed of it and not expressing it because it gets, judged in the community. So I felt like I had to do it, though. I had to express Alec, be Alec too in the world, not just my birth name. So that kind of happened in 1999, and at the same time, in Toronto, there's this whole new movement, trans movement, and community that came about through other trans people in the community that were my friends. Mira Slay Ross, and Xanthra Philippa McKay, and Boyd Kodak, and Casper, and Dennis, all these kind of pioneers of the trans community. I kind of met all them, and one of them said, you're really kind of not trans either. I'm like, yeah. And something with them said, do you know, maybe you're intersex. I'm like, oh, what's that? But I remember when I was a kid, my mother taking me to doctors because I started to grow a beard when I was like 12. Mm-hmm. And I was like really attracted to girls from the age of 4, stuff like that. I was getting in trouble kissing girls and stuff. And so I remember the doctor, not really knowing what it was, many doctors they took me to. They were just worried I would turn into a lesbian.
That was always the boring gender stuff back then.
Yeah, they were really worried about that.
They just didn't have very much imagination.
No. So one of them wanted to put me on female hormones. Another one wanted to put me in an institution until I'd learned how to wear dresses and makeup like a girl. And my parents were horrified, that the doctor was... They're like, no, we're not going to send our kid to a mental institution. Because they were very working class, and they didn't really trust authorities anyway, or doctors. So they just said, well, we'll just love you the way you are, support you whenever we can. And they were worried, too, because there weren't many people like me. And they thought I'd be alone for the rest of my life and stuff like that. So they were really worried. But I wasn't really thriving where I was growing up in Cape Breton. It was pretty... although there are a lot of alternative people there, I have to say, a lot of musicians and really cool people. And I had really good friends there. I needed to move to a bigger place, so I came to Toronto and got involved with theater. I was involved at theater in Cape Breton, too. I had a couple of plays done there, got a lot of attention. So my mentor said, you gotta move to Toronto. So I got here, got involved with theater here, and did some productions. And by the time I was 30, I was nominated for a Governor General's Award for a play I wrote called Black Friday, which is about Cape Breton and a lesbian going home to come out in Cape Breton with her lover. So I made a name for myself. So then I started working on Medusa Rising after Black Friday and met Gloria and Billy and started finding out more about the two-spirit identity and reading about it. And
how has it been different for you identifying as two-spirit compared with identities you held before?
I still feel pretty marginalized. Yeah.
You mean because of racism and colonialism?
Yeah, because of racism. Or? Yeah, I still find the community pretty racist and kind of stereotypes people of color still. Native people especially, there's still that stereotype, you know. I also, recently, since I found out my Two-Spirit name, I, through another Two-Spirit person who went on a vision quest for me, and they told me my spirit name and my animals and my colors and the things you, something that they were really proficient at was going on vision journeys for people, so...
What did that mean for you?
Well, it was kind of a realization that, yeah, this is who I am. Other people see it, too. Have all along.
That's interesting, too. Yeah. Like sometimes people spot things before you even know it yourself.
Yeah, like Billy and Gloria saying, oh, are you sure you're not one of us? And I'm saying, well, I could ask my mother, but she'd probably get really upset because I've tried to broach the subject before in the past and was like, no, don't go there. So it was kind of a painful subject to bring up.
Yeah, I mean, in those generations, too, the pressure to assimilate was...
Exactly.
Like, that was the way to success, right?
Yeah.
To...
Oh, yeah. My grandfather been out about being Native. He would have lost his job. And he had 6 kids to feed, you know, so...
How has being Two-Spirited influenced your art now?
Well, my novella is also about finding out about your roots, but the assimilationist aspect of colonialism. It's keeping these 2 kids apart who really like each other, are in love, but they're kept apart partly because of the queerness. Mm-hmm. One's a lesbian, one's intersex, queer, Two-Spirit. They're trying to force them to wear dresses and be a girl, and they don't want to be a girl. And part of the story is that they're actually related through their grandmothers. And they're trying to keep them apart because they don't want... One side of the family doesn't want to acknowledge the Native side. So there's that whole aspect to it, too. And also the main character is realizing through this relationship that they have that background. Also that they're a shaman, like a healer. They keep having these experiences where they kind of go to the Tree of Knowledge, the Tree of Life, which is a famous... Well, it's a well-known shamanic technique of traveling between the worlds through the Tree of Life. So they're realizing that. And my films, I wrote, I have made a trilogy of films called Misadventures of Pussy Boy. And it's about, again, a youth who's Two-Spirit meeting another Two-Spirit youth. And a relationship is happening. But it's all, misadventures is the big... They get in trouble again.
Have you had misadventures as well as your characters?
Oh, yeah. Always getting in trouble. Growing up, you know.
What's been your relationship with Aboriginal community since you discovered your roots?
Well, I met more Two-Spirit people. I have close friendships. I've been invited to a sexuality conference at the Native Canadian Center for Youth.
Mm-hmm. What's it feel like for you now to be in Aboriginal space?
Feels good, feels familiar, feels, yeah, I like it. But I've had kind of dicey experiences too, where I was part of this teaching module at, was it Anishinaabe Health? Well, they had some students that they were mentoring, and they had me come in and talk about Two-Spirit, and show some images I found over the years of Two-Spirit identity, what happened to Two-Spirit people through colonialism when the settlers came and genocided a lot of Two-Spirit. So I came and did a teaching like that, and then they invited me back at the end as a, you know, this is one of our presenters that came, and when I was introduced as Two-Spirit, before that all the other presenters who weren't, and they all got, you know, people clapping, and when they introduced me, like maybe one person clapped.
Oh, that's harsh.
Or a couple of people clapped. And another Two-Spirit friend was there, and he was like, oh, I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad I'm not the only one here. I think that was my friend Todd, yeah. So it's been very fruitful and kind of hurtful, too, at the same time, depending on the space, I guess. Mm. Yeah.
Is it possible to gauge ahead of time how safe you think a space is going to be, how welcoming it might be? Or is it really just you have to throw yourself into the mix and see how it turns out?
Yeah, you just throw yourself in there and hope it goes. But I've also been part of a group at 519 that was going for about a year.
An Aboriginal group?
Yeah, it was called Nanzing, which is, means changing one. There's about a dozen of us used to meet once a month and have a little feast, have a little teaching. We had Vern Harper come once and talk to us about what he knew about Two-Spirit. Mm-hmm. He said, which really helped me as a mixed person, you know, even if you have one drop of Native blood, you should be proud of that. So I'm like, yeah, I am proud. And so there was that group for a while that was going, and I also started my own little group, my own little circle through the 519. I was facilitating the meal trans program. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our two-spirit sex working trans sisters were coming to the group, but they weren't very happy. They were like using a lot and disturbing the group a lot and getting into fights a lot and feeling really isolated and not really helped. So I thought, I'm going to start a circle for them mm-hmm. to come to. And I asked my friend Rob Machano, who works at a Snobby Health. I asked him, could you help me with this group? He was like one of the first elders I met, mm-hmm. even though he's younger than me, who was working with the, you know, people living with AIDS and stuff like that. He often leads the AIDS Memorial. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh yeah, I'd love to do that with you, help you with that. And I said, well, I'm going to warn you, they're going to come and they're going to be, you know, maybe on crack or coming off of crack. They'll probably be drinking. And I know in the tradition, you can't have people like that in a circle. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, we're going to make an exception. He says, our medicines are stronger than the crack or the booze. So anyway, we started the circle, encouraged them to come, and they came. Sometimes they did come intoxicated and not in good shape, but after a while they started coming clean, and one of them even ended up getting clean and going to George Brown and becoming a social worker in their own right. Mm-hmm. And helping the community too. They're still a sex worker. And yeah, so
I think people who have community experience like that can do some of the really best work in social stuff.
Yeah. So I thought that was a bit of a success there, that we had that group.
It sounds like it really worked for people.
Yeah. And then
Was it an idea that you would want to do a harm reduction approach right off the bat? Because like you mentioned, like a lot of people can't get into ceremony or can't get into access traditional groups because of substance use.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think it's a good way to go. And then through that group, I met another two-spirit elder who went on the vision quest for me. She was in the group. She's from Sudbury, Cree two-spirit. She's part of the Ontario Native Women's Association, so she comes to Toronto a lot. She's a cousin of Rod's, so she came to the group, and after the group, we did a couple of circles together. She said, I noticed you don't have a spirit name. I'm like, no, I don't. And she said, well, I would love to do that for you, go on the vision quest. So I gave her tobacco as an offering. And about 3 months later, she's in Sudbury, so she contacts me through Facebook and says, I had to ask my elder if I could tell you this. I went on your vision quest, and I had to ask my elder if I could tell you this over Facebook. And they said it was okay. So she told me that my spirit name was White Wolf, and my animals were the turtle, the buffalo, and the eagle. And she said my colors were the rainbow, not just one color, the whole color. And she told me how to address, dressing the creator and introducing myself to their creator, how to do that. Then she offered to do a feast for me the next time she was here. So I invited some friends, and she publicly announced my two-spirit name in front of my friends, and we had a feast. And she had this amazing eagle feather fan, and she just kind of rebirthed me with this eagle fan. And she brought like this young man who was just learning how to be a singer and a drummer, so he was drumming and singing, and she was, it's quite amazing, in a friend's backyard. And And since then, I've gotten all these tattoos. I never even thought about getting tattoos before that. Never even occurred to me.
But now that's a way you can carry that information with you.
And I have the turtle. And I have this two-spirit. This is in honor of the two-spirit people who were genocided. Mm. And I have the eagle here.
Okay.
And the wolf here. White wolf. And then I have a buffalo skull here.
You've got a lot of ink going on.
Yeah. Okay. 11. And then these are my claws for my dog, Daisy, who passed away a couple years ago. She was like my spirit guide. Well, she's my spirit guide now. She was like my... Well, we took care of each other for 16 years. She was my familiar, along with my black cat.
I want to thank you for talking to me today, and I look forward to talking with you again in the future.
Oh, thank you.